and welcome to Beyond the Bar. I'm your host, Margaret Mullen. In having this podcast, it was very important to me right off the bat to share stories of paths less traveled in ballet and dance. I think a lot of times on dance podcasts, we talk about purely the success stories or difficult moments of people that have generally been very successful. And while those are also very important to share, and I have so much respect for the amazing, accomplished professional dancers I've had on the show, I also want to acknowledge the fact that this is not always how things work out. We all care a lot about dance as students. We work really hard to make it as professionals, but that is not always the path that all of us are set up to be on. And that can happen for a very wide variety of reasons, and it doesn't mean that anyone has failed. It doesn't mean that they lacked passion for dance. It just means that that wasn't the journey that they were on. And so I am so pleased today to welcome a wonderful friend of mine, Jennifer Turner, who has had an incredible journey through dance, but also away from dance. I met Jennifer in January. We have been in an entrepreneur mastermind course together and in a small group online together. I have learned so much from her over the past few months, and it has just been an absolute pleasure to get to know her, especially during this very stressful time of COVID, and also to discover our ties through dance. We are both dancers. We both went through a very intensive ballet journey, and now to find each other later in life, both going through different experiences, it's been really very inspiring for me and uplifting. I have so much respect for Jennifer, and I am excited for her to share her story with all of you today. Jen, thank you so much for being on the show. I'm so pleased to have you here.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much for having me. It's honestly such an honor to be interviewed alongside so many talented dancers. So thank you.
Well, I mean, you are once a dancer, always a dancer. And
yes,
absolutely,
I agree.
We never lose so much of that part of ourselves. And
so true.
I wanted to give, you know, a little more background on how we connected.
Yeah.
You know, this is part of me, I'm a broken record about trying to encourage dancers to have other interests, but
yes.
I think it is a wonderful thing, not only just to expand your mind, but also because you end up meeting some amazing people.
Yes.
And I met you through our entrepreneur mastermind course, as I've been trying to educate myself about business.
Yeah.
You are fully in your business, so I'm playing catch up on where you are in life on that aspect. But yeah, it's been... That just felt like a destiny moment. We're in this big group together with people all over the world, and we're pretty close to each other, Seattle and Vancouver Island. And
totally, yeah.
So that's fun too.
Oh, and I was so excited. I was like, oh my God, professional ballerina in our group. This was destined.
Well, it was so amazing to find out that you were a dancer. I couldn't believe that, you know, it just, I think people underestimate, you know, when they go out into the world, they're not directly interacting with people that are currently dancers, how many people have been through that path, really? You know, a lot of people,
absolutely,
you know, especially as children, so many people want to be a ballerina when they're a child, and then a lot of people end up taking it a lot further too, you know, into pre-professional, it's sometimes interprofessional, just short-lived, and then out into another field. And so it was really great to meet you just
absolutely
unexpectedly in this tiny group that we had.
100%. And I find that too, like when ballet has been, or dance in general, has been such a big part of your life as a child and an adolescent, it's weird to then transition into adulthood and not have it play such a dominant role. So it's nice to be able to validate that kind of part of my past and be able to connect with somebody about it. So super excited to meet you.
I mean, it's been great. We've been having a good time together for months now.
We have, yeah.
Learned a lot from you, and shout out to Baron, our other coterie
exactly.
member.
Also a former
dancer.
Yes,
yeah, also, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Now a DJ, which is really fun.
Yeah, all transitioned into different kind of creative outlets. So very cool to see how everyone's evolved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just such a pleasure to be connected with you too. But yeah, I've been so excited to do this podcast episode with you, because I think it's really important to talk about the other experience that we don't talk about very often, which is, you know, I've had the pleasure of having really amazing accomplished dancers on the show that have had full ballet careers, you know, Zipporah Kars and Wendy Whalen and Megan Fairchild. And that is wonderful. And we need to talk about that too, obviously, for people that do go that route, mm-hmm. but it doesn't always end up that way. And that is a
exactly
important and valid experience to have had. And it felt important to talk about, especially right now. It feels very timely because we are currently in a time where pretty much all dancers are unemployed. We're in this COVID moment. There are no live performances. I think a lot of dancers are really struggling with the idea of what's next. Do I make it back? Will I make it back? Mm-hmm. What if I don't?
Yeah, that's such a good point.
What if my company folds? What if I lose my job? What if, you know, just there's so many factors right now. Mm-hmm. What if I have to get another job that isn't dance because I have to pay my bills? And that's, you know, it's not exactly what I want to be doing. But here I am in this big life moment and I have to take care of myself. And what do you do?
Exactly.
And so I have so much respect for the transition that you made. In you own your own business now. It's so amazing. You do incredible work.
Thank you.
You've worked with over 200 brands, which is amazing. And
yes,
could you kind of give a little overview of your business actually while we're chatting?
Yeah, absolutely. So, and I do feel I should note that, you know, my transition happened from being a teenager and dancing and hoping to make it professionally. So my heart goes out to all of the dancers who, you know, this is their livelihood, it's their careers, all of the performing artists who are struggling right now, really wishing everyone the best and hoping things come to a resolution soon and that their transitions are easy. But yeah, so my business is Gemini Branding, and I am a copywriter and designer. And I found that, you know, working for an agency for so many years, you're either one or the other. You never get to be both. So you're kind of, you know, cornered into, you know, either you do copywriting or you do design. And I'm trained in both. I actually went to university for writing and business, and then later went back to school for graphic design. And I hated only being able to do one or the other. And I really felt that the two go hand in hand. You can't have one without the other. Although we're all obsessed with visuals and love, you know, logos and photography and Instagram feeds and Pinterest, when people look past the pretty pictures, all that's left are the words. And so I really wanted to find a way in my business to marry the two and bring them together for stronger branding. So I've always been obsessed with brands and marketing. So it just felt like a really natural extension of that kind of marketing industry to create a studio that really unifies both sides of branding. So I primarily help female entrepreneurs, which is kind of how we met, being within the mastermind together. So I help them brand their businesses from logos to websites. So that's kind of my sweet spot within marketing.
That is so cool. I love that. I love everything that you've created around the idea of incorporating your creative side with your strategic business side. It's the perfect marriage. I love that.
Thank you. Yeah, it's such a, I find, like, you know, even transitioning from dance, being within a creative industry now, we aren't always allowed to be the full expression of ourselves. Like, you're either creative or you're analytical, you're either this or you're that. And I find that running my own business allows me to be kind of the yin and the yang, the masculine and the feminine energy. And I really love being able to express all sides of myself.
That's incredible. And I mean, again, just what a successful pivot to have made out of what ended up being, I know that was a very difficult experience for you coming out of dance. And so I'm wondering if you can kind of talk us through, you know, let's start at the beginning. When did you realize that you wanted to become a dancer and what got you dancing?
Yeah. So I started probably like a lot of kids when I was really young. I was 4 years old. My sister is 5 years older than me, so she was 9 at the time, and she was actually the one in ballet, but she hated it because she had to give up her Saturday mornings. So I would steal her 2 big ballet shoes and run around the house. We had this god-awful tutu. It was like a red and white checkered tutu, like a mashup of Little Bo Peep and Little Red Riding Hood into a tutu. So I would run around the house in the tutu and her ballet slippers. And finally, my parents said, you know what, maybe Jennifer's the one that should be in ballet, because she seems a lot more serious about it. So that's kind of how it got started for me. And I just loved it from the beginning. When I was 6 years old, we moved to a northern community. I'm from Canada, so northern Alberta. And it was really remote, and we didn't really have the studio options that we had living on the East Coast. So I was kind of limited to, you know, either you go to the competitive dance route and you're on stage competing for medals, or you go the examination, the technique route. So I tried 1 year at the competitive dance school, and even at the young age of 6 or 7, I was like, nope, this is not for me. It wasn't quite the vibe that I was looking for in dance. So I transitioned over to RAD. So I was doing Royal Academy of Dance exams for years and years. And by the time I was probably 13, I knew I was really serious about it. Like, I had to choose between soccer or ballet, and it was a no-brainer. I was like, I want to dance every day. And so got really serious, was dancing every day, 6 days a week. But knew that around that time, my technique just, it's kind of that make or break point where you can be in a small community for so long, but without the proper training, you aren't going to get to where you want to go. So I started doing summer intensives. I would go down to Edmonton. I did 2 at Edmonton Dance Center and 1 at Royal Winnipeg Ballet, and just for a month every summer. And when I would come back from those experiences, it was like, I mean, first of all, they were a dream come true, because it's like you're dancing all day, every day, 5 or 6 days a week, and really just getting to live that kind of dream of being a full-time dancer. And the technique that I would experience, like the jumps in my technique, I would come back and I'd be like, wow, like this has really made a difference. So I was starting to get my first taste of what it could be like to train at a different school and get the level of attention that I was hoping for. So by the time I was 16, my parents actually, they knew how serious I was. They knew I wanted to pursue it full time. So we actually moved to the quote unquote big city in Alberta, which is Calgary. So several hours south, and lots of opportunity in Calgary for dance, lots of studios, just so much to choose from and so much opportunity. So we moved down there specifically so I could pursue ballet, and I ended up auditioning for the School of Alberta Ballet, which is kind of the school beneath the company, Calgary's company, which is Alberta Ballet. So I was going to a self-instructed school because we were dancing so many hours in a day. We had to leave around 2 o'clock, 2:30 every day. So going to a self-instructed school, there's 2 divisions within the School of Alberta Ballet. So there's the regular division, which is kind of the hobbyists, the after-school students that just come to dance for fun. And then there's the pre-professional division. So I was in the pre-pro division, which is all students who are very intent on becoming professionals and pursuing it after high school.
That's impressive at 16. Some people don't come to that later. Yeah. I didn't go into a program like that until I was 18. So bravo.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, full disclosure, you know, I got into the program without an audition based on my results in my examination. Oh. So I talked with the senior pedagogue, but then I get into the program and I was grossly behind. Like I felt like such an imposter, so much imposter syndrome. I was like, I shouldn't be here. I can't believe they let me in. So it was definitely that first semester was just working my butt off to try and catch up to where everyone else was at. And that first semester was incredibly exciting, right? Because it was so intensive. It was 3 or 4 hours a day, 6 days a week. And again, it was the dream, right? I was like, if this is a taste of what being a professional dancer looks like, I can't wait. So I was very hungry for it. I really wanted it. And that first semester was really exciting. Just so many jumps in my technique. Really felt like I was starting to integrate and catch up. And at the end of my grade 11 year, started experiencing pain in my Achilles and my right foot. And was just ignoring it at birth, which
common.
I wouldn't recommend.
Common among dancers and not the right route to go.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, I think it's really common among athletes in general, that sense of, you know, you want to seem like you can hack it and you don't want to complain. You don't want to risk losing any opportunities. We had our year-end performance coming up. I'd worked so hard to get to where I was and I didn't want to fall behind again. So I didn't say anything, but after a month or so, the pain was getting worse. And it was like literally anytime I pointed my foot, went up on demi point or jumped, which is everything.
So most things.
unless it was my supporting leg, I was like, yeah, I'm in pain. So I finally mentioned it to my instructor, and unfortunately, she said, let's wait it out. And the recommendation was not to get physio or to take time off. Again, that year-end performance was coming
up. It's so strange how that happens with I had that happen, too, with my hip. I apparently had literally torn something in my hip, and I went 8 months on it because doctors were like, well, let's try some anti-inflammatories. It's probably fine. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, it was not fine. But it's so
unbelievable.
Yeah, it's really interesting how that happens because you're like, I went to the doctor. And I know everything now. Not necessarily.
Yeah, of course.
It's so strange.
I know. Well, and that's, I mean, for me, that's a big part of my journey is like, we're so quick to trust others and people outside of ourselves. And especially when it comes to your body, you are the best judge if something is off or not. And even, I mean, doctors, they're so valuable. They're so important in our society, but we are so quick to give them authority over our bodies. Mm-hmm. And in retrospect, there's a lot I would have done differently knowing what I know now. But of course I was trusting my instructor and thought, okay, she knows best. So I'm just going to listen to her and we'll wait it out. Didn't want to mention I've already been waiting a month for this to kind of clear up. So yeah, so it got to the point, I performed on it. It was about 3 months of pain. And then I had a month off before doing our intensive. And so I thought, you know what? A month off, not being on it, that'll be enough. Mm-hmm. I'll come back. Inflammation will be down. It'll be great. We'll be good to go. Which was very nice. First day back at the intensive. Yeah. Yeah. I was like, oh, shoot. It has not gone away. It has not healed. I had not really done anything to help it heal. So I unfortunately had to opt out of the intensive that year, and which was even more daunting, taking 2 months off instead of one. And then when I went back in grade 12, my final year of high school, it was like panic mode, because at this point, I'm seeing all kinds of medical professionals, you know, acupuncturists, physiotherapists, chiropractors, doing hot and cold therapy. I'm doing all the exercises, and it's not really improving. So I'm sitting out quite a lot. And the longer I'm sitting out and watching class, the more I'm thinking, what am I going to do? Like, what happens next? What comes next for me? So grade 12 was a really scary, confusing year. Essentially, like at that point, hadn't really even accepted that ballet was coming to a close. I was really resisting it, but knew that I had to figure out what my next steps were. So yeah, that's kind of my ballet story in a nutshell. But after, I mean, grade 12, it essentially, I knew that I couldn't dance. So it was figuring out what to do next. And it was actually a long journey to even get to starting my own business, as I'm sure you can imagine, a good 15-year journey.
Well, it's interesting to talk to you about this injury, because I think, you know, a lot of young dancers we see, you know, it's in movies sometimes, it's like the dramatic moment with the career-ending injury where someone like hit the ground and there was a snap and it was extra dramatic. And
right.
And I mean, to be fair, that horrifyingly does happen, and I've seen it happen, and it's terrifying to watch. But sometimes it is more of like the slow burn where it's just, you know, this is a very physically difficult thing to do. And sometimes we just get to this point where you've added a lot, and adding a lot is okay for a period of time for some reason, and then it's not. And it's hard to fully explain why that's true in everyone's body. We're all built differently. I am a strong believer that there is no such thing as a perfect ballet facility. I think that every person has their stuff that they have to contend with. I don't think there is an ideal image for a ballet body. I think there's so many capable, amazing dancers that look different from each other. But I think part of that is like, there's always a bit of an internal struggle of, you know, this, we're not magically built to do ballet. Ballet is very physically counterintuitive to our
it's like all the things we're not supposed to do with our bodies.
Yeah, and absolutely. Yeah. And sometimes,
and that's the thing, like,
Sorry, I was just gonna say, like, sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't, and sometimes it works for a little while and sometimes it you know, and then it catches up with you, and it's just
it totally and that was such a big part of the confusion was it's, you know, it's not a break. Mm-hmm. It's not like you got hip surgery and came back and danced professionally. Like, you're a goddess for having been able, like, just such a champion.
Still haven't.
But stopped. That is kind of the, that is kind of the, you know, like, feeling at the time, like, I should be able to hack mm-hmm. this. It's just my Achilles. People have worse injuries. They go through worse and they bounce back from it. You see it on Instagram mm-hmm. all the time now, right? These dancers that are like, I've had two knee surgeries and a hip surgery, and they're still incredibly active as dancers. And there was such a, just a sense of failure mm-hmm. that it's like, why can that happen? And this is happening, like you say, the slow burn of the pain just won't let up. Nothing's really helping. Of course, in retrospect, there are things, you know, you talk about our bodies not being designed for this. I have very naturally flexible turnout, but I also pronate mm-hmm. a lot. And so my, you know, it makes sense that there was a lot of strain on my Achilles from pronating so much. And that's something that teachers didn't catch until years later in my 20s. I went back to dance and, you know, kind of let the instructor know, you know, this is something I deal with. And she was like, oh, well, yeah. And this is why. And it was just such a clear, like, yeah, maybe work on, you know, just slightly narrower turnout and you won't have that problem. And it helped immensely. But it's having, you know, there's so many factors that are at play at one time. And when you're in it, it's really hard to see the forest for mm-hmm. the trees.
Well, I think, too, mm-hmm. Considering the demands of different schools and different companies, what, you know, the people at the front of the room are looking for, I kind of reserve a bit of hope that going forward in ballet, maybe one of the things we can start integrating when we come back is, like, healthier practices of working through the technique, because I think there's a way to find good, stable technique within everyone's body. The thing is, it's not going to look the same on everyone because it can't.
Exactly.
And I think that was a big struggle I had as a professional dancer, was the expectations that certain people at the front of the room had. Not everyone. Some people, you know, saw what I had and saw that I was using my technique and were content with what I was delivering, but some people weren't.
Yeah.
Based on just how something looked on my body. But it was like forcing into, you know, positions that work for somebody else, but don't necessarily work with, like, my hip structure, or, you know, I have, especially it's been mm-hmm. so fascinating to learn, you know, about your own body. I'm sure you had this similar experience of, like, wow, our bodies are complicated. And, you know, just like my hip, like, looking at the structure of my hip, both sides of my, which is common, like, they're sisters, not twins. Like, my hip sockets, my, you know,
yes,
everything in there is, it's slightly different from left to right, and that makes a difference. And it's like, you have to exactly. be able to learn how to work with that stuff. And I feel like a lot of times when I had someone at the front of the room that was confident in my strength and my technique, I felt like I could really deliver solidly. Mm-hmm. But when I had someone that was really hyper focused on just specifically how this thing looked compared to the person next to me, I would, you know, I went through a period of time when I was a younger dancer, I would just force things in order to look like how they wanted mm-hmm. me to look, because I was next to this other dancer that looked a certain way.
Yes.
And it was not the right decision to make. And,
yes.
But there's so much comparison, and I'm sure that's, you know, I would imagine that was part of the anxiety for you too, coming up, seeing, you know, you're in this class full of other dancers, and it's like, how are they able to do all of these things and I'm not, you know, and it's mm-hmm. it's not your fault that was
exactly well. And that's the, I mean, both the beauty and the pain of ballet is that it's so it really prioritizes uniformity, mm-hmm. right? And everyone being the same, and the same, what that looks like is not dictated by you or your body, right? Your body has to fit into that ideal, and it's really like it's all about achieving that perfectionism, right? And there's a lot of beauty in that. It's obviously very aesthetic to watch and teaches you discipline and hard work, but it can also be really disheartening and like spiritually quite challenging, I think, to, you know, be able to leave ballet without any kind of body dysmorphia or, you know, kind of self-criticism and about your body, you know, failing you or not achieving a certain aesthetic or not being strong enough, flexible enough, mm-hmm. whatever it is, right? So it's, you know, I adore ballet and I absolutely love watching and dancing, but now so with a much more, a lot more self-awareness mm-hmm. of, you know, what it can kind of do to us mentally.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Yeah, I recently had my friend Matthew Renko on the show, and he has had knee surgery and some knee injuries. And I like that you brought up the point, too, about seeing dancers make these, you know, quote unquote, miraculous recoveries from surgery. And part of it, too, is, you know, we don't always see all the behind the scenes stuff of that. Like, I personally am still coping with some hip stuff. It excuse me, hasn't been a perfect mm-hmm. path back. But I think I actually really appreciated my hip surgeon. I adore her, Dr. Kara Beth Lee. If anyone needs her in Seattle, she's amazing.
Shout out
to Dr. Kara Beth Lee. One of the reasons I trusted her so much to do the surgery and have trusted her so much in consulting with her on things after that are difficult was how honest she was about the surgery before we went into it, because I had come out of an appointment with a doctor who told me that my career was over immediately. He was like, yep, I would just prepare to be done. Like, you have too much bone in one place, not enough bone in another place. I would just prepare to be done. Mm. And I remember an hour long car ride home in the back. I had to take an Uber there because it was so far away. And I remember just staring out the window, having a tremendous existential crisis because he was just so blasé about it too. And I was just beside myself. And
yeah, no bedside manner. Heartbreaking.
It was awful. Yeah, because
I'm surprised you weren't just like bawling in the back.
I think I'm kind of
self-restraint.
I'm a shy person, so I like wasn't a huge fan of the idea of like sobbing around a stranger. I was like, this is going to be really weird. But I definitely think I look haunted
upsetting than just crying.
But our physical therapist at P&B Boyd had referred me to Dr. Lee, and I went in and she was like, you know, I'm really sorry you had that experience, and I don't think that this is the end for you per se, but the thing is, like, she's like, I feel hopeful about this, but I'm going to tell you right mm-hmm. now, I cannot possibly make any promises about, you know, we can fix mm-hmm. it. I think we can get your pain down. I think we can get you back dancing. It will be difficult. And I don't know how long that will last. I don't know if it will, you know, she's like, there's no way to say for sure. And she's like, I know dancers need certainty. You want to know you can get back. And she's like,
of course,
I can't in good conscience tell you that. What I can tell you is that I think this is the right decision to, you know, to do this generally for your life.
Yeah.
But I cannot possibly make that promise, and no one in good conscience as a doctor should, because bodies are too complex. Yeah. What you do is so extreme. It's so hard to get back to. So I really appreciated that, because I think in that moment I had hope about coming back, but it also gave me so much more perspective. Like, that's really true, that like all we can do is try our best to fix these things, and it's not necessarily going mm-hmm. to work out. And I think dancers, we want that direct answer, like, you'll take this much time off and you'll be back, or you'll do this surgery and you'll be back. Like, it's
absolutely
not black and white, and I think that's really hard for us to come to terms with.
Exactly. We treat our bodies like machines, right? It's like, that, how often do we actually give our bodies grace and gratitude and say thank you for everything I put you mm-hmm. through, for every pair of point shoes I've worked through, for, you know, all of these things that we put our bodies through. And we just get upset when then they start failing us, or they start speaking to us, right? And saying, hey, something's wrong. You know, you need to pay attention to me. And instead, I think our conditioning as dancers is just to be like, shut up. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to hear it. I just want to keep dancing, keep performing. And we can't do that. We do have to tune in and listen. Yeah. And to your point too, like, I think, you know, we're talking about listening to outside voices, and we need that expertise and that guidance from our doctors, but there also needs to be some level of self-belief, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, what is my belief going into this? Do I believe that I can heal? Do I believe that I can overcome this? And I think as soon as we come up against that mentality of, like, I really believed I couldn't be fixed. I was like, you know, I've been to X number of medical professionals, no one can help me, I'm a lost cause. And I really think that if I'd had a different mindset at the time, easier said than done, but if I'd had a different mindset, it might have helped me continue to pursue other avenues. Mm. Like looking back, never changed my diet. Mm. You know, maybe if I'd gotten rid of all of the sugar I was eating because I danced so much and it wasn't an issue for my weight, then I could have brought inflammation down in my body, or, you know, there might have been other avenues to pursue had I believed that it was possible.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Opening up yourself up to that possibility is important, and not putting the pressure on ourselves too, because I think I don't think a lot of dancers really realize what an emotional connection they have to their own body. Like, they know they have the emotional connection to dance, it's all we want to do, but we have a relationship with our own body as dancers. And as you said, mm-hmm. there's the feeling of failure, and there's a feeling like of truly being betrayed by your body. There is a sense of betrayal. I have worked so hard for this and my body won't do it, and my body is failing me, my body is betraying mm-hmm. me. And that is very difficult to cope with emotionally, that feeling mm-hmm. of being let down by the very thing that you've worked so hard to fine tune into this beautiful instrument of dance. And I think we don't give ourselves enough space around that idea of like the hurt that we incur from ourselves from that moment.
Yes.
Being like, wow, you know, I think I talked to you about this, and I won't say their name. Someone I worked for, one of my supervisors, won't say who. I am haunted by the phrase, "I think you're probably not cut out to do this," when I was coming back from my hip surgery. And it's mm-hmm. later realizing that it was because I feared that for myself. I feared that about my own body. I don't think they should have said that. I think that was a very wrong thing to say. Mm-hmm. I think it was wrong for me to think of my body that way too. But it mm-hmm. made it very daunting, you know, every time I would fall out of a pirouette in class or, you know, have a little pain in
it
the hip.
It reinforces that belief.
Immediately, that was the phrase that would pop into my head because it felt so real, because, you know, it's hard to go through an injury and not worry about that on your own, too. You're already worried that, you know, like, can I do this? And that's, I think, always, even when you're not injured, can I do this? Ballet's so hard. Can I do ballet? But when you're going through an injury moment or a recovery moment or anything, like, I mean, I think we have to be very careful about what we say to ourselves, what mm-hmm. people, you know, as teachers, as coaches, as directors, as ballet masters and mistresses, which I know we're trying to get rid of that word. I know we're trying to figure out the new word, but the people at the front of the room, whoever they may be, I think also need to be really careful. You know, it's like you want, obviously, you know, sometimes as we're talking about, it doesn't always work out. Sometimes there is a stopping point, but I think we need to find a really compassionate way to address those conversations instead of just saying mm-hmm. things like that, because those are traumatizing moments.
Well, and it's so, I mean, to me, it just keeps coming back to this whole piece of external validation, mm-hmm. right? And that ballet is built on that, right? It's not just the physical toll. Like you're saying, it's the mental toll as well. It's the story that we're constantly telling ourselves. And I think it's quite common in ballet for that story to be, I'm not good enough, because the standard is so high, right? Mm-hmm. If you just have, you know, the wrong feet, it's like, hey, I'm not good enough. Like, it just takes one thing. If your turnout's not good enough, okay, I'm not good mm-hmm. enough, right? And it creates this story. And then we're always looking for evidence to reinforce that story. I was really fortunate at Alberta Ballet because I went into it thinking, oh, I'm not good enough. I shouldn't be here. I didn't have to audition because of my exams, but they didn't actually see me. They probably want to kick me out now. And it was just this constant story of, I need to try hard enough to be good enough. And I had one class. It was right before Christmas. You know, we had however many, 12, 15 girls in class, but because it was right before Christmas, everybody's out, they're already on vacation, so there's only three or four of us in class. So it's one of those classes where you get all of the attention, eyes are on you all the time. And the senior pedagogue was teaching. And at the time, she's probably like 75 years old. She's had multiple hip replacements, knee replacements, and was just a little dynamo. amazing woman, like just such a firecracker. I absolutely loved being under her tutelage. But at the end of class, she called me into her office and I was like, this is it. This is the moment. It's happening. And I was just constantly reinforcing this story. And she sat me down and she said, today in class, I knew you have what it takes. And it just, it changed everything, right? And it, and I'm not saying that, obviously it was very exciting at the time and it gave me the fire I needed to keep going and to have the confidence that, okay, I'm not going anywhere. She sees something. And then I started seeing it in myself, right? But the point is, whether it's good validation or bad validation, like, we need to stop attaching to it so badly. And I think especially when we're young, when we're in our teenage years, we don't have that sense of self mm-hmm. yet to kind of guide us and let us know that, hey, I'm okay, whether I make it or not. Hey, I'm okay, whether I get corrections or not. I'm okay, whether or not someone tells me I'm cut out for this. To have that level of self-confidence, I think, is really tough when you're a teenager. But to start practicing that and start kind of checking in with yourself every time you get some kind of feedback that feels really crappy or really awesome, check in with yourself, right? And say, you know, does this resonate with me? And is this true for mm-hmm. me? Or is it just somebody else telling me what I can or can't do? Yeah. And I think when we have that kind of approach to life, it's a lot easier to say, well, F that, I'm going, you know, if you think I can't do it, I'm going to do it, yeah. right? And I'm going to rise to the occasion. But
yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, I think too, I want to kind of dig into that period of time for you immediately after the decision to stop. But before we get into that, I think it's important to realize too that this is such a hard field to quote unquote make it into. And that is, mm-hmm. we're talking about all the physical stuff, but also just, I mean, I don't even know what the ratio is for how many dancers there are out in the world looking for jobs versus how many jobs there are, mm-hmm. but it is a very small percentage of available jobs. And mm-hmm. so I think, that is another thing that people need to realize is that not making it as a professional dancer is not a failure, because there are so many factors mm-hmm. to getting the job that you want. You know, it's unbelievable. Just what an imperfect process it is. And I think that's true of a lot of fields too. You know, it's like, you think it's, you mm-hmm. know, you go through, if I do X, Y, and Z that I'm supposed to, it's going to add up into this transition, obviously, mm-hmm. because I did what I was supposed to do and that's supposed to work out now. And dance is certainly one of those fields that is not necessarily true. And it's so much, there's so much personal preference involved by the people doing the hiring and the firing. And, you know, you just, mm-hmm. you really, it's impossible to tell who's going to actually end up making a full career out of it. It's impossible. I think it's impossible to say, you know, there's certain expectations, obviously, of being able to do things physically, having the work ethic, having the artistry, all these things, but it's still, mm-hmm. it's not a straight line to that career. Yes.
You can have all those things and it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to turn out the way that you envision it or the ideal.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean,
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because to me it was very, it's very invalidating not to, like, I really felt when I decided to stop dancing, I felt like the decision was kind of, my body made the decision for me, but it really felt like, well, now I'll never know if I was good enough. And I had this kind of feeling of like, it's an open end. There's no closure. I'll never know if I was good enough. But more than that, like, maybe I didn't love it enough. Like, I immediately started doubting, like, if I didn't make it as a professional, was I really that good? And did I really have the fire? And I really started doubting my own passion for dance because I didn't make it, which is ridiculous. And I think that it's so easy to just to feel invalidated by a process that doesn't serve everybody, right? Injuries happen. It doesn't mean that it was your passion for it was any less real. But like, even entering our coterie together in the mastermind, I was so excited to be in the midst of a professional dancer, but felt like, but my experience isn't as valid because I didn't get to the same level, right? And you've, of course, been nothing but, you know, welcoming and reassuring that, no, like, every experience is valid, and it doesn't mean that somebody is any less talented or full of potential or full of passion. So I think that's a really important thing for people to understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, I have so much respect for you. I think you're so, such an amazing person. So it kills me to think that you would think that your experience in dance wasn't valid, because it absolutely was. And I think I feel really, I feel really fortunate to have been lucky enough to have had a school to come up through where I got to stay all through high school, because it really allowed me to see, I had some very talented peers in my class growing up in multiple classes, like classes above me, the class I was in. And it really opened my eyes to the fact that this is an imperfect process, because I feel very confident, not in a self-deprecating way. I really feel quite confident that there were a lot of kids in my class growing up and above me that were equally, if not more talented as ballet dancers than I was, you know, could do a lot of things that I couldn't do, that I really, really admired. Yeah. And very, very few of them became professional ballet dancers for a variety of factors. You know, there are so many reasons that didn't happen for a lot of them. And then some, you know, some actively chose not to, but had the talent. And it just, you know, it really expanded my mind, I think, coming into PNB, coming mostly, or, you know, being surrounded by people that have been through like this very long trajectory of like SAB or these, you know, intensive schools where they're surrounded by, you know, all people that are actively trying to become professional dancers, or just kind of this pipeline feeling that they started earlier.
Yeah.
And I feel really lucky to have had that experience, to watch how many of my friends that I grew up dancing with that were so talented and didn't become dancers, but are still living perfectly happy lives. And that I still, when I think back to them, I still have incredible respect for the dancers that they were. I still consider them those people. They're not a separate person from the ballet dancer that I grew up with, you know, until we were 18 or 19 or whatever it was. They just went a different path. And I think that that is important to realize, that there's, you know, there is a lot of talent in this world for dance, and there's a lot of people capable of doing it. And just, sometimes it doesn't align. Sometimes they don't want it to align. Sometimes they do, but, you know, this factor in their life wouldn't allow it. You know, whatever it was, they couldn't afford to go
there.
Well,
I think that's such a,
you know, whatever.
That's so, as you're explaining it, it's like, well, yeah, because in any other industry, like, how many times have I seen a friend, you know, be the right person for the job and not get it, or be really, really deserving an award and not get it, right? And we don't question that, well, they were the best one for the job, but they didn't get it. And that's just the way life is. But I think in ballet, because it's so built on perfectionism and having the ideal body, or, you know, the perfect combination of technique and lyricism and musicality, that we don't give it that same degree of grace. We kind of default to, well, whoever makes it to the top is the best. Like, they have all those things. And we forget that there is a degree of imperfection in the process where, yeah, this person could have been just as good, but for, you know, ABC reason, isn't in the position that this person is in. And that's okay. Yeah.
And it definitely does not mean that you did not love it. Because, especially to have made it to a certain level, you know, to commit that much of your time to ballet. You clearly love it if you're willing to spend hours and hours.
It was such a, I mean, it's just funny to see, because I feel like I'm in a very different spot now, but to even see remnants of that kind of thinking kind of resurface in meeting you and starting a dialogue with you about ballet, of me kind of feeling like, well, I'm a fangirl, I'm not an equal in the ballet world, right? And it's just funny that that kind of stays with us. And I feel like such a big part of that is because our identity gets so wrapped up in this thing that you do all day, every day. Like, I was like, I don't care about boyfriends, I just want to dance. Like, all through high school, I was like, no, like, who, I'll take ballet over boys any day, right? Like, it was just so, it was such a singular focus. And so then to lose that, you know, it's really difficult to come to terms with, well, then who am I without this? And can I still love it if I can't do it in the same way that I used to? And at the time, definitely felt, if I can't, you know, in some capacity be the best, then I don't want to do it at all. Like, everyone immediately was like, oh, well, then you should teach. And I was like, no, I want to do it myself. Like, I want to dance myself. And if I can't do it that way, then I don't want to do it at all. So I left it for a long time to kind of heal from that and eventually came full circle. But it's just funny how when our identity is so wrapped up in it, it's difficult to see it any other way.
Yeah. And I'd love to, let's talk about that moment just a bit more. So, you know, you made the decision, could have gone into teaching, all these things, made the decision not to. And when you made that decision not to, what was that like? Do you remember that period of time when it was like, okay, and this is over?
Yeah. You know, I definitely remember it. I mean, it didn't feel like a moment. Mm-hmm. It felt like all of grade 12, all of my final year of high school was just angst. And it was funny because I remember chatting with some girlfriends at the time. And my one friend was like, do you just like go home and cry once a week? Because I'm crying all that. Like, grade 12 is just so stressful. You've got final exams. We had provincial exams in our grade 12 year. We were all dancers. We're all, you know. Yes, exactly. And just like this impending sense of what's next? Like, what are we doing after we graduate? And really coming to terms with where we each were in our lives and in our kind of quote unquote dance careers. So it was just this constant like emotional roller coaster of I love this thing so much, but man, I really feel like this isn't going to happen. And I didn't really create space. Like, I think I was holding on to hope, but I didn't really create space to focus on the loss of it or to properly grieve it, which in retrospect, you have to grieve it. Like, it really genuinely is, you know, the loss of something you love to some extent and the loss of identity that you have to kind of wade through. And I was too young to kind of understand that or be able to just have the faculties to go through that. So it was more a sense of panic and like, okay, well, if I can't do dance, then what is it going to be? What am I going to do? So I madly started applying to universities. I think just in this vein of like, being wired to achieve and to, you know, I didn't want to take a gap year or time off to, you know, figure it out. So I just started applying to universities. And the thing that made the most sense was physiotherapy to me. I was like, well, I'll go into kinesiology. I'll become some kind of physiotherapist or medical professional to help other students, other dancers who have gone through the same thing I have. And amidst that process, there was this bitterness of like, but no one actually helped me. Like, I never actually got this figured out. I didn't actually heal. So like, I just didn't fully buy into, you know, this belief that I could heal, let alone help others heal. So I applied to several schools for kines and one school for writing. And in retrospect, it was like the most like guided decision I made because logically it didn't really make any sense to go into writing. I really loved writing. I was always very artistic and creative and expressive, but I wasn't really sure what I was going to do with it. I just knew that if it couldn't be ballet, at least writing was creative and it was expressive. And it kind of felt that in and of itself, I think choosing writing was very healing because it kind of bridged the gap between dance and whatever's next. It allowed me to continue to be creative and express myself in a way that, you know, if I couldn't through ballet, at least I had another outlet that I have a sneaking suspicion biology just wouldn't have been the same. So yeah, that, I mean, it was really just panic and confusion and kind of grasping at straws. And then I got into the one school I applied to for writing and it kind of, all figured itself out from there.
And when you made that transition, I know you said you kind of took a step away from dance. How long did you end up separating yourself from that? And what did that feel like, that separation?
That was messy. It was, I took that summer off the year that I graduated and it was funny. Any time that I was dancing through high school, I always joke that like, oh, I would put on so much weight if I wasn't dancing because I didn't have a great diet and I really didn't eat as an athlete. And so that summer, I put on probably 15 pounds just by virtue of not dancing, not knowing what to do about my feelings or how to express them. So chocolate became a really great way of feeling through those. And so what happened was I get to school in the fall and I wanted to keep dancing. I wanted to keep doing ballet, but I started and I was so frustrated because my body was different and it didn't feel the same. And so I would, you know, I'd get to bar and my thighs fit together differently. And I wasn't as flexible because I didn't, you know, take class all summer. And so it was a very just frustrating. I was mad at myself, still mad at my body, mad at the whole kind of situation. So that's when I took a step back. I would still go to see ballets and would get really emotional. You know, I remember opening score to the Swan Lake and just crying silently in my seat because I was like just so heartbroken. So it was a very kind of tumultuous relationship the first few years. And after that one semester of trying to take classes, I knew I needed to step back a little bit further. But then just slowly kind of started integrating later in university. I just really missed dance in general. So I started playing with other kinds of dance. I went back to tap with a girlfriend because I was like, tap is just fun. Like it's just, you know, it's so much fun. Like it's nothing but fun. And so my girlfriend and I enrolled in an adult tap class and, you know, went into ballroom dance class and just found other ways to enjoy dance that didn't have to look the way that I was used to them looking. Mm. So I have yet to enroll in a proper ballet class since then, but have always been really drawn to ballet style workouts. So I love going to bar and just love moving in general.
Yeah. And do you find now that you're not in as much pain as you were? Did that end up correcting itself for you?
Yeah, I think for sure. It was on and off for years. And then once I started getting more into nutrition, I feel like inflammation in my body started to go down quite a lot. I've always had a sweet tooth. So sugar is, I definitely notice changes in my body if I'm having too much sugar. But really, for years afterwards, I'd feel it on and off in yoga and certain yoga positions. It would kind of pinch or hurt a little bit, but without the kind of everyday constant rises and releves and demi point, it really did start to heal itself over time. And today, yeah, totally pain-free in my Achilles.
That's great. Yes, to see pain-free life, yay. It's possible.
Yes, yeah, it is possible. And we have to want to heal too, right? We have to believe we can and want to heal, so.
Yeah, and give time.
Yeah, it's a journey for
sure. Sometimes it takes way more time than we want it to.
Exactly.
And I think that's something really to hammer home is I loved that you brought up that month. I took the month off and that was supposed to heal everything. And I have seen endless cycles of frustration from my students to my colleagues as professional dancers, as adults, where it's like there's supposed to be a period of time that you take off and then you're fine again. Mm-hmm. And it boggles our minds when that rest period doesn't add up to the healing. And unfortunately, sometimes these things are just, I mean, mysterious, and they don't have there's not a date that you can be like, I will be ready by the 30th of September. I will be healed. Like bodies.
Yes.
I mean, they do their own thing. And I like that you brought up the nutrition aspect. You know, I also have a sweet tooth, but yeah, it's something to consider. You know, I think when you're serious about, you know, recovery, and it's harder to know when you're young because we're not all, you know, we don't all get taught these things about like how, you know, our nutrition plays a factor in how our body is responding, but it is, you know, something to consider. It won't necessarily fix everything, but another avenue to explore. We explore, you know, the things that we know to do, like you said, the physical therapy and the acupuncture and the massage and stuff like that. But there's, I mean, our bodies are incredibly complicated. And so there's so many things to think about that could weigh in for us on these journeys.
100%. And I feel like at the time I was dancing, I mean, maybe it just wasn't in my kind of, my sphere, but like nutrition just wasn't, I didn't know about it. I didn't honestly couldn't have told you that it impacts your physical performance. Mm-hmm. Like, I wouldn't have been able to tell you that protein helps you build muscle. Like, I didn't know anything about nutrition. And I feel like, especially in recent years, like, that there's been a surgence of you know, information mm-hmm. about how to eat for performance and inflammation yeah. and whatever else is of importance to you, right? And I do think that it doesn't hurt, right? Yeah. It doesn't hurt in your healing journey to use food as medicine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, and we're all, you know,
might not fix the
exactly.
problem.
But. Yeah, and our body chemistry is all, you know, a little different from each other too. Like, I remember getting a stress fracture when I first joined the company and finding out that I actually, because I've been eating really healthy, you know, quote unquote, but it just wasn't the right diet for me. And it turns out for me, I'm supposed to eat more carbs than protein. It's just like how yes. my body is compared to, I mean, that would be the polar opposite for a lot of people. And it's so hard to figure that out. So,
yeah,
you know, don't be afraid to get guidance. And I shout out to The Whole Dancer. I love that, you know, I love that account and that yeah. program. You know, it's one-on-one mentoring for dancers. She's been on the show before. And
amazing.
But yeah, it's yep. so nice that there are people that can help now more easily than, you know, generations
exactly.
past. I wanted to ask you, you know, now that you're in this different phase of life and, you know, in this whole different field than you started out in, you know, thinking about the positive, because you know, we're talking about this time where a lot of dancers are having to pivot in their careers and potentially mm-hmm. long term, who knows, you know, what are the traits that you feel like you acquired as a dancer that have been helpful to you in another career?
Oh man.
So I think we don't
traits as a yeah, dancer.
I think we don't give ourselves enough credit. You know, I think dancers think a lot of times the panic of like, well, I don't know how to do anything else but dance, but there's actually a lot of strengths that we develop that can be applicable to other professions too. So
yeah. Oh my god, I mean, so there's so many, right? I mean, discipline is always the first one to come to mind, like to be able to go to a self-instructed school when you're 16 17 18 and actually be ahead in classes because you're that motivated, I think is I think it's just a natural byproduct of feeling passionate about something. But discipline, obviously hard work, like dancers like to show up every day and put both your body and your mind through such tolling extremes. And the mental fortitude that comes with that, I think is really to, if you can, you know, we all eventually find our way out of dance. And I think that when we do, to be able to still be a complete whole and happy person is just a testament of our mental fortitude. But I think too, like for me, it was such a beautiful lesson in when we are doing something that we love, it doesn't feel like work. Mm. Like it really, of course there's hard days and, you know, it's sweaty, you know, quote unquote hard work, but it doesn't, it's not tolling. Mm. And I feel like having worked in a number of settings where it really was like, I liked the work, but perhaps not the environment or the leadership or whatever else, it can be really draining and really hard to want to wake up every morning and do the same thing again and again. So I think it was a really good model for, you know, even choosing between biology and, you know, taking bio and going the physio route versus writing. I knew just innately, intuitively that writing was going to be more akin to ballet. Writing was going to be that piece that you love so much, it feels less like work. And so finding something that aligns with that energy and really feels similar to dance, I can't imagine my life had I not done that. And I don't know if I would have, like, I might have been much more inclined to be analytical and choose something logically mm-hmm. had I not had ballet and that experience as, you know, something to reflect on and something to reference in my life. So, mm-hmm.
yeah, we're capable of having more than one thing light us up. And I, yes. I think we get so our focus gets so narrow as dancers. We're all in, which is, you know, it's important to be very, very, very invested. But, you know, at any stage, whether it's as a young dancer because of an injury or whatever else it may be, or as an older dancer, it ends for all of us. You know, being a dancer
yeah.
is not forever.
It's
yeah, it mm-hmm. is very
exactly.
Yeah. And so we have to consider that. And I think I've seen cautionary tales myself up close of even, older dancers that have had tremendously successful careers, long careers, and they still hit that place where, I mean, it ends and then they're terrified mm-hmm. because they haven't thought about what else could I possibly do that would.
Yeah.
And I think too, that's something that leads to a lot of people getting into teaching or coaching or staging, maybe when they shouldn't. Some people are very well suited for that. I think some people do it because they think they're supposed to, it's like, but this is something else mm-hmm. in the studio, but then it kind of ends up triggering more anxiety for them because they just want to be dancing again.
Yeah.
And, so I think it's
well, not everyone are teachers either. Yeah, right.
Exactly.
Like not everyone is cut out to be a teacher. Like case in point, the person that told you maybe you're just not cut out for this is probably not the kind of person I would think should be teaching and guiding. No, yeah. Exactly. Right. And I do think, ballet kind of, sets us up for that. It's so intensive and immersive that we don't really have time to explore necessarily other passions or other interests. Mm-hmm. But I think we deserve to credit ourselves with that and to give ourselves time and the possibility to allow something else to be, if not as fulfilling in a similar mm-hmm. way, because I guarantee that that's possible for everyone. It's just, letting that barrier down enough to say, okay, I love ballet, I dance, but it's not all of mm-hmm. me. It's not who I am. That's not where my value comes from. It's just one part of who I mm-hmm. am.
Yeah. It doesn't mean it's not important. It just means that it's mm-hmm. part of your, part of the larger picture of your life and
the whole package.
Yeah. And I think taking time to reflect, especially right now, take time to meditate on the things that have brought you joy recently, even if it's something you watch in a TV show and like, could that lead to anything bigger? Why mm-hmm. did I like that so much? What about it, made me feel joyful? Or, just
totally.
This is a time where we all need yes. to figure that out, because, who knows how long some of these shutdowns are going to last and what the landscape will be like when we come back from it. And
mm-hmm.
but yeah, I think just paying attention to how you're spending your time and the things that are lighting you up besides trying to be in the studio.
Yeah.
Could be.
And good. I think too, like being really mindful of, like, how does ballet make you feel? How does dance make you feel? And I think for a lot of us, it's free, mm-hmm. right? Like when you're dancing, you feel free and you feel light. And being able to actually label what that feels like will help guide you in, okay, well, what else makes me feel mm-hmm. that way? Like, what are other examples of, for me, it's travel, it's writing, it's designing. Like, I feel that it's owning my own business. I'm like, I feel free. I'm finally not bound to like the 9 to 5. And like, I do have that same sense of freedom and lightness in my body and my mind that I have when I'm dancing. And so I think being able to kind of, however that looks for you, be able to define, well, what do I value about ballet? How does it make me feel? And then being able to kind of bridge the gap between that one particular form of expression and other things that, might also make you feel that way too.
Absolutely. Ugh. So inspiring. That feels like the perfect place to close, because I know you have Aww. Other work to do too. But I am just so grateful to have had you on the show, and thank you so much for sharing all of that. I think it's incredibly important for us to examine all aspects of what it means to be involved in this field, and it's mm-hmm. wonderful to hear your journey. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me again. It's such an honor. And it's also just such a pleasure to be able to make the time to reflect on this and hopefully share something that's of value to others listening.
I think you absolutely did. Thank Yay. You, Jen.
Thanks so much, Maggie. We'll see you yes. soon.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Beyond the Bar. This episode was produced and edited by Serena Fishman Jimenez. Our theme music is by William Lin Yi. You can catch up on past episodes at margaretmullen.com/podcast or by searching for Beyond the Bar on Apple Podcasts.
If you enjoy the show, you can follow us on Instagram at Beyond the Bar Podcast and consider giving us a rating on Apple Podcasts to help the show grow. Thank you for tuning in. And until next time, I'm your host, Margaret Mullen.